We hear our Bible readings now. The first of them, continuing your passage through the book of Exodus, and the second of them coming from one of Paul's letters.
This is from Exodus 16, 1-18. The whole Israelite community set out from Elim and came to the desert of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after they had come out of Egypt. In the desert, the whole community grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The Israelites said to them, "If only we had died by the Lord's hand in Egypt. There we sat around pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted. But you have brought us out into this desert to starve the entire assembly to death." Then the Lord said to Moses, "I will rain down bread from heaven for you. The people are to go out each day and gather enough for that day. In this way I will test them and see whether they will follow my instructions. On the sixth day they are to prepare what they bring in, and that is to be twice as much as they gather on the other days." So Moses and Aaron said to all the Israelites, "In the evening you will know that it was the Lord who brought you out of Egypt, and in the morning you will see the glory of the Lord, because he has heard your grumbling against him. Who are we that you should grumble against us?" Moses said. You will know that it was the Lord when he gives you meat to eat in the evening and all the bread you want in the morning, because he has heard your grumbling against him. Who are we? You are not grumbling against us, but against the Lord." Then Moses told Aaron, "Say to the entire Israelite community, come before the Lord, for he has heard your grumbling." When Aaron was speaking to the whole Israelite community, they looked towards the desert, and there was the glory of the Lord appearing in the cloud. The Lord said to Moses, "I have heard the grumbling of the Israelites. Tell them, at twilight you will eat meat, and in the morning you will be filled with bread. Then you will know that I am the Lord your God." That evening quail came and covered the camp, and in the morning there was a layer of dew around the camp. When the dew was gone, thin flakes like frost on the ground appeared on the desert floor. When the Israelites saw it, they said to each other, "What is it?" For they did not know what it was. Moses said to them, "It is the bread the Lord has given you to eat. This is what the Lord has commanded. Each one is to gather as much as he needs. Take an omer for each person you have in your tent." The Israelites did as they were told. Some gathered much, some little. And when they measured it by the omer, he who gathered much did not have too much, and he who gathered little did not have too little. Each one gathered as much as he needed.
This second reading is from Paul's letter to the Philippians, chapter 2, verses 12 to 18. "Therefore, my dear friends, as you have always obeyed, not only in my presence, but now much more in my absence, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God who works in you to will and to act according to his good purpose. Do everything without complaining or arguing, so that you may become blameless and pure, children of God without fault in a crooked and depraved generation, in which you shine like stars in the universe as you hold out the word of life, in order that I may boast on the day of Christ that I did not run or labour for nothing. But even if I am being poured out like a drink offering on the sacrifice and service coming out from your faith, I am glad and rejoice with all of you. So you too should be glad and rejoice with me."
Thank you both. I had a tax refund a couple of weeks ago. It's always good news. But at the back of the accompanying pamphlet, there's the heading, Complaints. If you have a complaint, and it goes on to tell you what you do with your complaint. Well, I don't complain at having a tax refund. That's a little bit surprising. But if you have a complaint, I would think the Inland Revenue have any number of complaints. But some things ought to be complained about. oughtn't they? That they shouldn't just be left to rest. So how is it that St. Paul writes to the Philippian Christians, do everything without complaining or arguing? Everything. Well, as Paul gives this instruction, I can't help thinking that his mind is going back to those remote, distant days when Israel was wandering around in the wilderness for 40 years before Joshua led them across the River Jordan into the Promised Land. That he's casting his mind back to grumbling and complaining that the Israelites went in for in those distant days. So, we're looking at Exodus chapter 16, when the Israelites complain, if only we had died by the Lord's hand in Egypt. There we sat round pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted, but you have brought us out into this desert to starve this entire assembly to death. That's their complaint. You will find a similar complaint in chapter 17 of Exodus, though there the issue is the absence of water to drink. You will find the issue again back in chapter 15 of Exodus. This concerns water as well, but they couldn't drink it because it was bitter. So there were issues about which they were complaining. One feels that they were romanticizing their past, rather, as they looked back and said, if only we'd died by the Lord's hand in Egypt, there we sat round pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted. Well, I wonder, did they really? So that's what happens, isn't it? When you've got a grumble, you tend to idealize the way things were in the past and in the process distort the past. Did they really have all the meat lying around for them to eat? There's some evidence that their conditions in Egypt were not that bad and that they may have been reasonably fed, and there are indications that fish was freely available, even if meat less so. But I can't believe that they were right in their reminiscences here, that there was all the meat they could possibly eat. And now here they are out in the desert and they haven't got any, so they might as well be dead. Enthusiastic beginnings and high hopes often degenerate into disappointment and disillusionment and grumbling when reality is faced up to. I'm quite sure they came out of Egypt, led by Moses, with great enthusiasm and high hopes for the future. But it's not long before it begins to turn sour. People idealize the way things were and seem to have forgotten that progress always comes at a cost. The first flush of newly discovered Christian faith can recede with time. As a new convert, who maybe like me went forward at a Billy Graham crusade many years ago, but somebody who's got converted in one way or another finds that the Christian life is not always like that. It's not always as easy as they had hoped when they made that first commitment. There are challenges to be faced and temptations to be overcome. And maybe grumbling sets in. They never told me it was going to be like this. But then what did you expect? So here are the Israelites with their grumbles about the absence of meat, and they direct their grumbles at Moses and Aaron. Don't blame us, say Moses and Aaron. It's not our fault. It's the Lord you are grumbling against. Who are we, says Moses, that you should grumble against us? Moses also said, you will know that it was the Lord. Well, when the Lord meets their complaint. Don't blame us. Blame the Lord. And don't you find that we are very prone, when we have a grumble, to blame the wrong person? So we blame the bus driver when the bus turns up late. It's not his fault. He got caught in a bus jam. We blame the receptionist at the doctor's when we've had to wait more than 4 minutes or whatever it is. It's not the receptionist's fault. But then, because it's very hard to make contact with the person who we might feel is really responsible, that we take it out on the person who's next at hand. And so here are the people blaming Moses and Aaron, and it's not Moses and Aaron's fault at all. Well, in this story in Exodus chapter 16, having first heard the people's complaint, then heard Moses and Aaron's response, we then go on to discover that the Lord hears them and graciously responds to their complaint in the form of the provision of quails and manna. What were they? Well, this part of the desert area apparently was on the quail's annual migratory route. So they had a lot of quails, just kind of dropping in, waiting to be clobbered and eaten. But that wouldn't have kept them going all year. Presumably they don't keep migrating fully 12 months. So it would have met their needs at one point. But this story in Exodus is not only being told as a kind of natural account of the way things happen in the natural world. It's surely being presented to us as something miraculous, something that goes beyond expectation and beyond the norm. Now, I don't know whether they had quails permanently or whether they were just to keep them going. But the manna, no, that was something else altogether. And again, some people say that there is a substance found on the branches of a common desert bush which seems to resemble the description of manna. So is this, again, simply a naturally occurring item that the Israelites are able to take hold of and that keeps them going? Because this is going to be what they live off for the next 40 years. Well, it's the natural one is apparently the excreta of two insects, and I'm sure you're pleased to know that. But again, the phenomenon of manna, like that of quails, seems to go far, far beyond what might have been expected through the natural order of things. So it's being presented to us in Exodus as God's miraculous and generous provision for the people's needs. Mind you, maybe sometimes the distinction between nature and miracle is not particularly hard and fast. But the Lord hears and responds. And we've heard something in the reading this morning about the regulations concerning the collecting of manna and how much you collected and then when you didn't collect any and that sort of thing. It's all very detailed. Now, I'm interested to know that those other two references in Exodus where the Lord, where the people complain, once again, the Lord provides for them in their need. But they do get criticized for their complaining. More about that in a minute. They were not complaining about trivialities. They're complaining about food and drink, for heaven's sake. So why do they get condemned for complaining about the absence of essentials for their survival? They are condemned at Exodus chapter 17 and verse 7, where Moses called the place Massah and Meribah. This was where they grumbled about the absence of water, because the Israelites quarreled and because they tested the Lord, saying, "Is the Lord among us or not?" Now he's really having a go at the Israelites there for their, what seems to me, perfectly reasonable complaint. Describes it as testing God, as somehow not being content with the God who has just brought them out of slavery in Egypt, so surely can be trusted. But they grumble, they quarrel, they test the Lord. And it probably tells you in your footnote about Massah and Meribah, the labels given to these places, where Massah means testing and Meribah means quarrelling. So that's where those names come from. They get condemned for this. And that condemnation is echoed elsewhere in the Old Testament and the New. There is, for example, Psalm 95. Now, we read Psalm 95 earlier on in the service. We didn't read the whole thing. We read the nice, easy bit of Psalm 95. The bit's all about praising God and thanking God. But when you get to the later part of Psalm 95, the tone changes. "Do not harden your hearts," it says, "as at Meribah, as on the day at Massah, when your ancestors tested me. They shall not enter my rest." They didn't, of course. That generation did not make it into the promised land. "Do not harden your hearts," the psalm said. So the Israelites, when they were complaining and grumbling, are described there as having hardened their hearts. So not doing something that's acceptable at all. And then you come to the letter to the Hebrews. In the New Testament letter to the Hebrews in chapter 3, there is a long quotation from Psalm 95, from these verses, about not hardening your hearts. So this condemnation of the Israelites is being carried on into the New Testament. Hebrews chapter 3 warns against having a sinful, unbelieving heart that turns away from the living God. I think in some ways this is setting the scene for when Paul will write, "Let there be no grumbling, no arguing, no quarrelling, no complaining." So what shall we say about grumbling and complaining in the light of these verses from the book of Exodus? Well, the first thing I'd want to say is that some things should be complained about. Some things are wrong. They are incompetent. They are negligent. And they deserve to be complained about. And even if you choose not to complain on your own behalf, you might feel justified in complaining about somebody else's plight, where somebody else has been landed in their plight because of another person's incompetence or lack of concern. I think that should be complained about and should not be quietly put up with. But But that doesn't mean we have to turn into quarrelsome people. Anyway, some things should be complained about, and I think the absence of food and drink should have been complained about somehow. Okay. A second thought is make sure you choose the right issue and beware of exaggeration. If you're going to complain, get your facts right. Make sure that you're complaining about something that really matters. Who cares if the bus is 5 minutes late? Does that really matter? But food and drink for hungry people, that's a different issue altogether. And the poverty in which millions suffer is a different issue. So we should make sure that we are complaining about a real issue and not a triviality. And we should make sure that we don't exaggerate the facts of the situation, making it out to be worse than it actually is. Another thing is that we should direct our complaints at the right person. So if we go to South Cam's district office in Camborne and we have somebody over the other side of the counter, don't get at that person because you have a complaint about your council tax. It's not their fault. Make sure you get to the top of the ladder with your complaint. Now, last week I used the coach service to London. I should have got on it and then been dropped off at Madingley. But the bus didn't go to Madingley. When I came back, it stopped at Parker's Peace. And when I said to the driver, "But my ticket is through to Madingley," he said, quite justifiably, "Well, I've finished my stint. I can't drive any further. But I can take you on at 7 o'clock. Well, this was at 10 past 6. Okay. Was that an issue worth complaining about? Well, I don't think it was, certainly not to the driver. So I went to the bus kiosk on the edge of Christ Pieces a couple of days later and told them about it. And they said, "Well, you need to go to the National Express head office about this, you know, to get refund on my bus ticket to Madingley." Now, if I'd been so inclined, I could really have flown off the deep end at the receptionist at the kiosk. It's not her fault. If I've got a complaint, I need to take it to the top. So I just feel this is very important. If you're going to grumble and complain, make sure you're grumbling to the right person and not inflicting your feelings on the wrong person. And the fourth thing I've put down is beware of becoming a complainer. Now, I think being a complainer is different from having a complaint. Hopefully, once in a while is as often as you'll have a complaint. But if you're a complainer, you'll be going on all the time and you will be unbearable. I don't know whether you're a complainer. That's part of the beauty of being a visiting preacher. You can say what you like and nobody need feel got at. Because I don't know anything about any of you. But beware of becoming a complainer because they are awful people. Everything's wrong. Everybody is in the wrong. They'll grumble about absolutely everything that happens. You stand in the queue at the bus stop or the post office and you'll hear the complainers at work. They'll be complaining about the weather, about the post office, about the bus service, about their own ills and pains. They think they'll never stop. Now you and I don't want to be like that, do we? While we may be justified in the occasional complaint, I don't think we're justified in being complainers. And if we feel that in all honesty we are, or if some trusted friend tells us that we are, then by golly, don't we need to pray to God so to pour out His Spirit upon us that we can overcome this weakness and become entirely more likeable and lovable people. I've run out of time. I knew I would. I knew I'd have far too much packed away in the rest of this sermon to get round to it. But at any rate, we looked at the Exodus passage, and that was the one that I was asked to look at. When the Israelites grumble and complain, and in the process they get long living condemnation for that, because it shows their lack of faith, lack of trust, and lack of obedience. But looking at complaining and grumbling in a bigger way, some things need to be complained about in order to be put right. But you need to be sure you're picking on the right issue and going to the right person. And in the process, you want to make sure, by the grace of God, that this grumbling business doesn't become a feature of your personality.